everyone, welcome back. It's another episode of Inside Boxing presented by PPV.com in association with Uncrowned and Yahoo Sports. May 2nd is quickly approaching. David Benavidez versus Zerto Ramirez on Cinco de Mayo will be streaming on PPV.com. So go ahead and follow PPV.com for all of their content, giveaways, follow us, subscribe, all that good stuff. By now, you know that PPV Fight Weeks and Inside Boxing go hand in hand. That's our next big one on May 2nd, in addition to the full PBC slate that will come out this summer. So thank you to PPV.com. Go ahead and follow them. Chris, how are you doing, my friend? It is Wednesday, April 22nd. We're doing it a little bit early this week, but a lot of boxing news. We just got to get to May. Like, this month hasn't been the greatest with the fights. We got to get to May because I'm looking at the May schedule, and it looks outstanding.
We are so spoiled, Dan. We went months. We used to go months without, like, really good fights. Now we go 2 weeks, and we're like, ugh, can't wait till May. We're wishing away our lives right now, Dan. We're wishing our regular lives to get to our boxing lives. That's how important boxing is to us. But yeah, no, well, May is going to be incredible. We've had a great year so far. Boxing is alive and well and flourishing, if you ask me. May's going to be sick. I'm super excited for even next week. This is like a dead week. We don't have a whole lot going on. Last weekend wasn't a whole lot. This weekend's not a whole lot, but next week it becomes preview time for May. So next week is big.
Yeah. Huge month. We're ending April. Tonioka versus Okoli fight off.
We got to talk a lot about Callum that, Smith. Dude. We got to talk a lot about off. That one, dude.
So, like, you know, fights falling. It wasn't that strong of a month to begin with, but when fights fall out, when it's not that strong of a month, then
you really notice.
Yeah, but you say boxing's flourishing and it's in a great spot. I tend to agree. We are fans of the sport. Can it always be better? Yes. We just wrapped up the Senate committee hearing for the Ali Revival Act in Washington, D.C., which saw Oscar De La Hoya, Nico Ali Walsh, Nick Khan of TKO, and Tim Shipman, who represents the ABC, all speak on behalf of their entities. Obviously, Nick Khan representing TKO, Zuffa, and the changes that they want for the Ali Act. Oscar De La Hoya in opposition of it. Nico Ali Walsh, grandson of Muhammad Ali, in opposition of it. Tim Shipman just sitting there, not offering much of anything. But clearly that they are going to be working with Zuffa. That's what I gathered from Tim Shipman's involvement in it.
Yeah, Dan, you got to fill me in because we're doing this right now. It's like this literally just wrapped. I was on live with Pro Box TV for the past couple hours while this was going on, looking at my phone as you're texting me about it. So I'm hearing this firsthand, just like everyone else who's listening to us right now.
It wasn't anything groundbreaking. It was a lot of what we already knew. Like, we know that what Zuffa's pushing for. We knew what the resistance is pushing for. And it's just, I think it's a foregone conclusion that this bill will go through. There might be some minor alterations to it because they did listen to the, you know, Nico Lee Walsh's side and Oscar's side in terms of little things that could change with it. But ultimately, this is going to go through. And I think it was very chummy. There was a senator, Senator Moreno from Ohio, straight up used this platform to beg Nick Khan to bring WrestleMania to Ohio. And they were just chumming it up on the stage. You know, he also told Nico Ali Walsh, I had a poster of your grandfather up on my wall. So it just didn't have like the vibe of like a serious, serious thing. Like I did like that it didn't get too contentious and that each person spoke. There was no interruptions. But I didn't think there was any massively big changes that are going to come for this. But there were definitely some takeaways. I thought Nick Khan was the most prepared. I thought he was the most eloquent. And I thought he really drove home his point. And that's not shocking because he's Nick Khan. He's one of the most powerful, was one of the most powerful agents in the world. He's a lawyer, and he's now the figurehead of TKO. He got his points across, and he really hammered home the nostalgia aspect. Hey, guys, do you remember the 80s, how great boxing was? You remember the 90s to this committee that doesn't know boxing at all? Like, remember when Marvin Hagler was the middleweight champion of the world? He was like the 3 belt holder at the time. And you, look at what it is now. He brought up today's middleweight division, which was very smart on his part, because as you listen to the show, we all know it's a dumpster fire of a division. He went through all the champions, and you never heard of these guys. They don't fight each other. Look back in the day when Marvin Hagler was the champion. Meanwhile, Hagler held 3 different belts, and Oscar did push back on him. But that was Nick Khan's stance, his nostalgia. Boxing isn't what it used to be because of what we let happen to it. The chaos, the confusion. Let us come in with Zuffa and these UBOs, clean everything up, make the fighters more money, and bring boxing back to the forefront. So that was Nick Khan's stance in all of this. Oscar pushed back with the things that I wanted Oscar to push back on. He just didn't do it eloquently enough, and just didn't. He could have went a little further. Talked about how, you know, the promoters should always let the fighters know about the full revenue. They should always get 80% of the revenue. They should always get all of that. So that was good from Oscar, but I felt like he didn't go far enough.
Well, that's powerful coming from Oscar, though, who's a promoter, who in his best personal interest would not want all the money to go to the, you know, that much money to go to the fighters.
Totally agree.
That's a big deal.
As much as Oscar was a much of a letdown, he's still Oscar De La Hoya, and I give him credit for going. He still holds weight, especially in front of this committee. They don't know much of anything, but they know who Oscar De La Hoya is. So I do give Oscar. I did get on pretty hard afterwards, but it's still Oscar, and he's one of the best fighters of all time, and he's also a current heavyweight promoter. So it was nice to hear him say that, and in some of those things, I just thought he could have been a little more prepared. The star of it, I thought, was Nico Ali Walsh, grandson of Muhammad Ali. He raised a lot of the points that I wanted to say if I was up there, was if you guys have such a, if boxing is so broken, or if you guys have such a great thing going with Zuffa, why you want to change everything? You know what I mean? Why are all these UFC fighters complaining about fighter pay? Why is there a $375 million antitrust lawsuit if everything is so great? And he said the number one thing that I wanted to make sure that was said today was, if you're going to go ahead and be the last promotion standing, if Zuffa has their way, they are the last promotion standing. We don't know how many years that's going to take for that to happen. There won't be a choice. You'll have all the control. There will not be a choice if you were the last promotion standing, because that's what Dana White has been saying. That's what Zuffa's talking point has been with this Revival Act, is, oh, we're going to have a choice. If you're a fighter, you can sign it to the UBO, or you don't have to sign it to the UBO. But if Zuffa has their way, they're the last promotion standing. You don't have a choice. Then they lower the percentage down to 15% of the revenue, and then they have a monopoly. So I really liked what Nico Ali Walsh said up there. He got the point across, but ultimately nothing's going to change. This is going to go through.
This is going to get hammered through regardless.
Yeah, there's going to be some minor alterations to it. They did listen, but all in all, I thought it was pretty much a colossal waste of time. But the sport's going to change, and how long and how big of a change, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. You got a guy like Khan up there who's a lawyer. And obviously, he's going to speak eloquently. He's going to come prepared. This is what he does for a living. And you got Oscar speaking, who holds a lot of weight because of who he is. But in terms of delivering the information, you're not. And Nico Ali Walsh, again, I didn't hear this yet. But you said he did a good job, and I believe you. He's a smart kid. He speaks well. But again, he's not a lawyer either. He does have his name attached to this thing, but he's a young guy. He's relatively novice in the sport. So yeah, it's just tough because we're so fractured. Boxing is so fractured. So any kind of pushback that we ever could put together, it's pretty hard to squash by powerful beings and powerful entities, which is what this is with the TKO and this coming through. But I agree with you. This is going to get hammered through. These are powerful people who know how to do these kind of things, and I've been doing it for a long time. The fact that it's going so fast shows you how powerful this group is. The fact they're able to get Congress to move on boxing is wild. Especially like what Ali Walsh said, there's a $300 million antitrust thing going on right now. Like that's still going on, and they're still able to hammer this through. It just shows you that you're not going to stop this thing. But in terms of what it does to the sport moving forward, I don't know. And in terms of what the fix is, I don't know. You could be asking me for the past 20 years what boxing needs to be better, and I don't have a clear cut, concise way to get there. I don't think anyone really does. It would take a lot. I don't know how this is all going to pan out. I don't know, how we fix this thing. I always thought that the Muhammad Ali Act needed more teeth and more be expanded upon and steel-manned rather than completely abolished and rewritten. So, yeah. But again, this is boxing. Nothing will save it. Nothing will kill it. And this is not going to save it. This is not going to kill it.
Yeah, there will be resistance, and we're seeing that kind of now from the promoters all forming together under DAZN. To put on the best fights and give the consumer the best product going forward. But like we've said numerous times on this show, and if you've been following along, you know the grand scheme is for them to pass this legislation, get all their ducks in a row, sign fighters to exorbitant purses, just because you got to do that. That's not going to change in boxing. That's just been going on for the last 30 years. As a new money man comes in, they throw Conor Benn money, they throw Berlanga money, throw Hitchens money, and then you gradually change the economic structure of the sport over years. This is the Zuffa plan, and then they are controlling boxing. The point in between that is how long that will take. The point in between that is how much resistance will there be from Matchroom, from Golden Boy, from Top Rank, from the quote-unquote establishment of boxing. That remains to be seen, and that could take several years. That could take 10, 15, 20 years. Depends on how much money they want to put up. Depends on how much money Zuffa's willing to put up. Depends on what fighters are willing to sign where. Managers, all the things about boxing that are make it chaotic and, to me, make it exciting. I love that Nico Liwas brought up the uniforms. Oof. I was like, let's
go. He brought that up in front of Congress.
It was great. He brought up the uniforms. I have the tweet here. The tweet is going off right now. It's got like 2,000 likes. Nico Liwas references Zuffa Boxing's uniform policy, which restricts sponsorships. And says, you know, not only does the uniform allow us to represent ourselves and
express
ourselves individuality, we also are able to put sponsorship on the trunks and allows us to make some money. Under the UFC model, which we've seen, he also mentioned that the Zuffa boxing cards are bland and corporate. And we can already see that they're installing uniforms and they don't want sponsorships on them because it's the same exact thing that the UFC is doing. So they allowed Nick Khan to answer that, and he said, well, under this, we will have a uniform sponsor deal, which the fighters will get a hold of. And then that's when Oscar said, like, yeah, but do the fighters get to see that money? Do they see what's in the pot, or is it just one uniform thing? So that was a good moment there from Nico Liwas. I do want to bring up something that Oscar...
Real quick, though, from sponsorship deals, I had one sponsor in the Pacquiao fight that was six figures, and it was just to wear something on my person, just a record. Six figures for one sponsor.
That's what I mean. I guarantee it's not going to be that for the Zuffa thing.
No, of course
that was part of Nick Khan's his retorts to a lot of everything. Where let's get a collective company in here, a conglomerate that will come in and get trading card deals, video game deals, sponsorship deals.
Yeah, but what percentage of that goes to the fighter?
That's what I mean. Like, I'm not too privy to what UFC has. I know for a while they had Venom. Did they still use Venom for their fight kits, or is it a new one?
I don't know who it is now, but
it was but Reebok.
To my point before, though, like, my sponsorship where I got six figures, you know what percentage of that went to me?
All of it.
100%.
That's what I mean, and that's what Ali... Exactly, that's the beauty of it. That's what Ali Walsh was trying to say. Whereas with Nick Khan, he's saying, all right, there's going to be money in the pot and it's going to be divvied out, but it's going to be just like a corporation where they're trying to say, like, his whole point was it's so chaotic and it's such a Wild West sport. The top guys are getting the money. You're like you're the top guy at the time. You're fighting Manny Pacquiao. You're going to get that. I think his argument would be, what about the undercard guy? What about the mid-level guy? And that's the argument for Zuffa. That's the argument for TKO. And because I do think our audience... There's some people that are for and there's some people that are against. I'm not saying that this is like the end-all be-all. I think you agree there too. Like, there are parts of the revival like that I think are good, like the health insurance, the getting these guys into the Performance Institute and the deal they have with Paramount is these are all good things. So I ultimately don't fully agree with it, but there are some good aspects of it as well.
Yeah, but you also got to see how it shakes out, because they were good aspects of the original Ali Act that were not really actionable, you know. And we got to see how these things work out, and that's how all this is. You can say all the things under the sun, but what is actionable? What are we actually going to see? What kind of changes are there really going to be? And that's only going to play out with time, unfortunately. And the guys who are in it now, like especially right now, these guys, they don't really care. They got a platform. They're getting paid well right now. But I even say this about myself. Like, I never knew how much money I could make as a fighter. I never thought I'd be a millionaire being a boxer. Yeah, I was used to fighting kickboxing. I was fighting for world titles for a couple grand. And I was happy to win world titles there. And that was my dream. And then when I took it to boxing, I was like, I'll go out there and I want to fight. I didn't care about as much about the money. I didn't realize I could be a millionaire. And then when I got to making millions of dollars, I was like, wow, this is great. And that a lot of these young guys may not understand, you know, what they actually can do, and they're going in now like, oh, I'm getting free food. I remember the kid Merriweather was talking about the food he was getting at the Apex Center and the PI. I've been working so much today. I'm dyslexic. About the food he was getting at the PI and the way he was treated and this and that. It's easy to appease guys who don't know any better early on. It's just,
that reminds me when I worked at Bleacher Report, my first job out of college, and they had snacks and a full keg in the kitchen.
This is the best job ever. And they were paying, exactly. And they were paying you.
I couldn't even pay my rent.
Right.
Cause I was like low. I was like,
but you sure bragged about working there.
I know.
I couldn't pay rent, but I didn't definitely bragging about working there.
You best believe I had my friends come to the office after 5 p.m. when we were allowed to tap the keg and play Xbox. But it's a little bit of that going on. I do want to bring up some stuff from Oscar because we talked about we want to see both sides of this. Oscar did say this. He had an opening speech that went into like how under this new law it will put profits over the fighters. And his speech was good. I thought everything after he could have been a little bit stronger. But Oscar said Zuffa Boxing is fully funded by the Saudis. We have already seen how that kind of funding reshaped the sport through LIV Golf. We should be honest about what is happening here. That was sport washing, a clear effort to use sports to reshape reputation. But then I'm thinking, like, okay, that's a pretty strong stance against Saudi. Like, using the word sport washing that's strong. But then again, Oscar has worked with Turkey. I'm pretty sure he's going to continue to work with Turkey. I'm pretty sure he sold Ring Magazine to Turkey.
Well, he does say he wished he didn't do that. I did hear a report.
But did he do it for $10 million?
He still did it, yeah.
So, like, that part is just funny, and that just shows, like, the contradictory nature of our sport. Is he totally out with Turkey?
Probably not.
I would like to know that. Like, is Ryan Garcia, didn't Ryan Garcia just fight on a ring card against Mario Barrios?
And the one before that was against Rollies. That was also a ring card.
And Conor Benn fight is probably going to be a ring card, which is, in turn, Saudi. Oscar also told the Senate boxing is very transparent and that promoters take care of their fighters. Claims that Zuffa will not be.
Well, but his own biggest star is still different. That's not entirely true.
I mean, Canelo famously sued him. Ryan Garcia sues him every other week. Virgil Ortiz is currently in arbitration with Oscar. So once again, I commend Oscar for showing up. And he still carries a lot of weight in the sport. But like...
Well, he always will. More chances. Oscar's not Oscar. He's a legend. And he's done everything you can do in this sport. So he's been on all sides. What he says carries weight.
There were a lot of chances for him to step in and be a little more
forthcoming. Again, though, he's not a lawyer, and he is a promoter still. Like, he's not going to be able to present the information like someone who literally does this, like a public speaking lawyer who's a litigator.
He is a promoter for the last 20 years. Like, yeah. You should be able to talk. Like,
It's one thing to be able to talk about a promotion of a fight that's coming up that are your fighters and you're putting together. It's another thing to start talking legal stuff.
Under oath.
That's a really good point. Under oath, promoters can get up there and just lie through their teeth, at the podium. There's no one fact checking them in real time. Can't do that in front of Congress.
And he also he reads his clapback Thursdays now. He has like a teleprompter.
Yeah, of course.
There's no teleprompter.
And they're written. I don't think he's...
Those used to be like off the cuff. Now they're like fully edited, like productions.
big production.
Like I was in it.
Oscars, don't stop. They're still... Don't stop doing those. Yeah, they're hilarious.
Yeah. Whatever. I don't know if this was said. I kind of caught the beginning of it. I missed like the speeches. But did anyone bring up to the committee, which they needed to be like handheld throughout it? Because let's be honest, they don't care about boxing. They don't know anything that's going on in the sport either. So that's why Nick Khan did such a good job with the nostalgia, because you can play to that all day long. Did anyone say to the committee about how under this UBO, the promoter is also the ranking system, and that's where there's a conflict of interest? Like that right there, I think would raise a lot of eyebrows.
Well, you got to also use the word double dipping, because that was the big thing in the 90s, double dipping is when you had managers acting like promoters, acting like working for the fighter, working against the fighter, taking, there was a bunch of articles about that kind of thing. I think actually Joe DiGuardia was called double dipping Joe DiGuardia back in the, I think it was in the 90s, dealing with Lou Del Valle. And that was before the original, the Ali Act in the early 2000s with John McCain. You got to bring that up because, like you said, the conflict of interest there is obvious to anyone who does, whether you know about the sport or not. When you see that, if you lay out that what you just said, the manager promotion ranking system, it's just sit guys out. It's just too much power in one place,
dude. You could sit guys out and dock pay for them not fighting whatever in the contract says they have to fight two times a year or six times over.
The thing is, the checks and balances falls upon, there is no checks and balances, but it falls upon whatever the governing body is. And the governing body is not, it wasn't like they were voted in. Like, it's a company. Like, you're just at the top of the company. If you have enough money to buy into the company, you bought into the company, you took over the company, took over the sport, and you decide who fights who when and who's ranked why for what. There's just way too much power in one place. And again, it's not like these people were voted in to be the higher power of like a boxing god or like a boxing president who can decide these kind of things. It's a company at the end of the day.
Who would be I always thought Lou would be the commissioner, but he's so crazy.
Teddy Atlas. We actually spoke about this. Teddy was a guy who he brings up.
Speaking of crazy.
He's brought up a bunch of times about what boxing needs, and he's been saying this for decades. But I feel like he'd be a really good spokesperson for going to bat for the fighters.
Do you think Teddy Atlas, speaking of Teddy, this is like off topic here, but I'm affiliated with boxing, so everyone always introduces me that. You're a former boxer. So I was like playing golf the other day. The guy was like, oh, I heard you're in boxing. I'm like, yeah. He goes, oh, I know Teddy Atlas. Like, Teddy Atlas is my cousin, or like my cousin works with Teddy Atlas. It always comes back to Teddy. Like, everyone knows him.
I think that's because you're in the Northeast. I don't get that. Traveling around, I haven't really got that. Also, was he an older guy?
No, he was like my age.
That's probably it's a Northeast thing.
But it's always like my cousin, either like, oh, my grandfather fought in the Golden Gloves, yes, or my cousin works with Teddy Atlas.
So Teddy is universal because, one, he had decades on ESPN and became a celebrity off of that.
Tyson.
But even before that, he was Tyson's trainer, and Tyson is a lightning rod in everything, let alone, the sports. If boxing comes up, the first thing that comes to most people's minds is Mike Tyson. Yeah. So
that's third.
Yeah.
And the
it's a 6 degrees of separation from Mike Tyson is really what it is. And Eddie's Teddy's right there. But also Teddy's also a great guy. People that have been around him meet him, and he has an energy about him. He's in the community as well in the Northeast. Every year he does the fundraiser in November for the Teddy Atlas Foundation. I think he has access to a lot of people like that you can touch. So that's why the Northeast, he's going to have, hold a lot of weight.
But even like he bittered on boxing. He soured on boxing, I should say, because he would probably go on his rants on ESPN if there was a bad scorecard. It became the Teddy Show. And then they slowly phased him out. And then he jumped ship to UFC, which a lot of boxing fans, even myself, were like, oh, man, like, you switched sides, bro. Like, you went to the more popular sport. And now he's easing his way back because I think Turkey likes him.
Yeah.
But there will never be a boxing czar. But there could be. It could be Dana White. Remember the Zuffa's promo video was Dana, as they literally anointed him as the savior. And it's really not Dana White. He's the figurehead. Like, it's the Nick Khans. It's the Hunter Campbells with the UFC. But one other thing, too, is like, I'm watching the UFC as a casual, and I'm seeing that they're having a lot of issues with popularity, making stars, making fights. Like, their heavyweight division is a joke. Like, I talked to Francis Ngannou last week, and he was like, what the heck is going on with that? Like, they can't even make the fights. And their whole calling card, UFC, is that we can make the fights. Then I look over at WWE, and I'm not even a consumer of it at all, but I do listen to the Uncrowned Boxing Wrestling Show. The kid Jason Solomon does a phenomenal job, and I kind of get up to date, and they're unhappy with the product. And that's TKO. So the UFC, TKO, and now they're going to be getting into boxing.
Boxing's not going to be your savior, guys. If you're just so you know, if you're
that's going to be a low third.
If you're worried about bottom line, boxing's not the place to make your money back. No one makes their money back in boxing. We have so many people come into our sport, the Jay-Z's,
they want to get rid of all that.
The 50 cents. They come in and they realize this business is insanity, and it's really hard to make money. You lose a lot of money, and then they leave and they close the door, and they never look back. And they're like, okay, That was fun. Not doing that again.
Well, that was the whole reason Dana never wanted to get into it.
Yeah, it's a money pit. Boxing's rough, man.
Yeah, but they're willing to take it on. They have such a big conglomerate, yeah. TKO. They've look at the but money.
If you're complaining
generating.
About WWE and UFC, you're gonna jump ship and go to what you're looking at as like a sick dog. You're gonna try and nurse back to health. I mean, they just want
that third sport. They just want to monopolize the sport, and so TKO gets even bigger. It's all about the shareholders. That's what this was. Nick Khan was representing the shareholders, and the shareholders are. That's what. Pro wrestling has turned into, like this WrestleMania event last week. We grew up watching WrestleMania. Remember how awesome WrestleMania? That's the biggest one, and that was a huge event.
I wasn't really that big into it, to be totally honest.
But you know, WrestleMania is the big one.
Wrestling was huge. My parents would never buy a pay per view for
me neither.
I've never even watched WrestleMania live ever.
I would watch the scrambled one.
Yeah, my parents would never buy that. Although we bought every single boxing pay per view that ever happened because my grandfather. We had Showtime and HBO at all times because of boxing, because of my grandfather. That's and every amazing. Pay-per-view that came on, every Mike Tyson fight, you know, we were buying and we had parties for. But WrestleMania, my grandfather, if he saw me watching WrestleMania, he would smack me. Literally, he would smack me in the head.
I think my dad took us to Survivor Series at the Garden. It was Undertaker. It was The Rock's debut.
Wow.
He was called Rocky Maivia. And Shawn Michaels lost to Psycho Sid.
Was he Italian then?
Rocky Maivia.
He came out.
He was getting booed. He was like fat and pudgy and like no one even knew who he was. Undertaker came down from the ceiling. That was awesome. And then Shawn Michaels lost the belt to Psycho Sid and I was so upset because I was a big Shawn Michaels fan.
How about that glow up? You look at photos of The Rock back in the day, you know, when he had fat. The chain outside of the
bad hairline.
Bad hairline. You know, he had the gynoclimastia chest. Now he's got the best physique in the world ever.
Definitely natty, right?
Well, I mean, I think he would tell you otherwise himself, but it's crazy.
He says he's natty.
No, he does he? What? No.
I've never heard him once say, I'm on steroids. Liver King obviously got exposed. Is The Rock next?
That would be a real fall from grace. I mean,
we all know he's like 60 and he's like he's insane.
And he looks better than he ever has in his entire life. It's wild.
The Hollywood diet.
You know who I saw the other day on the socials was Stone Cold Steve Austin. He also looks better now than he did when he was
wrestling. He's amazing.
He's the best.
He's one of the best file. He's still cracking beards. He's on a ranch. His takes are always good. He hasn't done anything to embarrass himself. Stone Cold is a fucking man. That was our era. I mean, not to veer off, but like, it all is now coming into one thing. It's all blurring. Like there's UFC is owned by TKO, WWE is owned by TKO, and now if they have their way, boxing will be under that umbrella with Zuffa Boxing. But they're all struggling right now. I wish someone would have brought that up today in the hearing. Hey, why didn't Oscar say, hey Nick, if you're killing it, and UFC is the anti-boxing, and there's so much confusion, like you say, Nick, with the middleweight division, too many belts. There's a freaking BMF belt floating around there. We have Justin Gaethje fighting for the interim title against Ilya Topuria when Armin is out there. I can't pronounce his last name. I'm casual.
Sir Khan, I think it's something like that.
Right. You can't even make the biggest fights and you have a monopoly over the sport. I would have loved.
That's a good Oscar point. It's like you already have the blueprint for what you want and you still can't make the biggest fights. So what are we doing here? And this is a much bigger talent pool.
That's what I would have said. They should have invited me to this thing.
You should have threw your hat in the mix. Got up there.
Podcaster, Dan Canobio. Hello, everyone. I'm representing. This would have been me.
Lifelong
boxing person.
Lifelong.
Never leaving. No. It's like the mafia. I'm in it. How do I leave this?
No choice, Dan. Did you finish college? I know I ask you this every
show. Oh, yes. Yes, I did. Despite my horrible vocabulary, I have a degree.
Communications degree?
I have a degree from the same college as you.
No,
so
I have a master's degree from the graduate program on the campus that you went to, yes.
And I went to college for 7 years, so I should have a doctorate.
I got 2 degrees in the same amount of time that it took you to get a bachelor's in communication?
My friends and family jokingly called me Dr. Dan after I graduated 7 years after my high school graduation.
I'm calling you Dan Canobio, PhD, from now on.
Listen, everyone out there, it doesn't matter. It's not about how fast you finish. It's about how you finish. Because look at me now.
Put that on a T-shirt. Dan.
That's right.
Dan Canobio, PhD.
Let's move on.
Please.
To Richardson Hitchens vacates the IBF title, which should set off a domino effect here. He says he will move to 147. Last week, he signed with Zuffa. They don't have a 140-pound division. Zuffa has problems with the IBF. So the IBF goes and orders Lindolfo Delgado versus Teofimo Lopez. Teofimo Lopez says he's going to 147. I don't know if that fight happens. Oscar Duarte, who was supposed to fight Richardson Hitchens in February, he's the number three ranked 140-pounder by the IBF, has a fight scheduled May 2nd. So I think they're going to move past him. That's how they went to Teofimo.
So
there's a lot of, it's a web there with Richardson Hitchens that I ultimately think leads to Devin Haney. I'll get to that in a second.
But. Zero surprise about Hitchens moving up to 47 for a number of reasons. One, we've already saw him go to Zuffa. And listen, there's some miscalculation, I think, on everyone's part, us included. And I've gotten to speak to Edgar Berlanga recently about his new signing with Zuffa as well. He will be campaigning at 68. And there was reports that Richardson Hitchens was going to still campaign at 140, even though he's under the Zuffa umbrella. And I say umbrella because it seems to be all-encompassing with multiple tiers, depending on the signing, right? So you've got Jai Opetaia, right, who was signed by Zuffa, but he was a world champion, and he's also in a weight class they don't have. He's a cruiserweight. Still allowed to fight in his weight class. Still allowed, able to fight for the Zuffa belt. Then you sign a guy like Conor Benn, who is obviously not going to fall into the league roster situation because he's trying to get fights with Ryan Garcia, calling out Shakur, Devin Haney, these kinds of things. So, like, those guys are not under the umbrella, but they're still trying to make those fights. So that tier is allowed to still fight in the weight classes that are in between, also allowed to fight for the original governing body's titles. So it's different rules for the different tiered system, obviously. And Hitchens, although he said he was going to fight at 140, because he could, because he is a legitimate world champion, he's undefeated as well. But at the same time, it certainly seemed like making that weight was a big issue, because I think if he, I don't think he wants to give up his title. I don't think he can make the weight. So I think 47 is where he was destined to go anyway, even though they went out and came out and said he was going to fight at 40, and then they kind of went back on that. I don't think it has anything to do with Zuffa or not wanting to fight so-and-so. I think he just can't make the weight. The last fight fell through. I got to go on their word. I'm not going to sit there and say, what everyone else wants to say. Like Oscar wants to say, oh, he was scared. Guy pulling out the day of a fight is a wild thing to do. There's a lot of times. There's a lot of places you could have pulled out prior to the day of, hours before. I tend to believe his tweet. No.
It's same thing you're saying. Imagine me investing in a whole 13-week camp.
Yeah.
Draining my body to the most extent. Make weight. Miss a 7-figure payday and give up my world title that I worked my whole life for to be scared of Duarte. Run with whatever narratives you want. And I quote tweeted and said he's got a point here. No one wanted to hear that.
Perfectly said. Because I also know Hitchens. I used to spar him in Brooklyn all the time. He's huge for 40. It was very difficult for him to make it, and he's been fighting there his whole life. I think Keith Conley put out a statement. He's been making the same weight since he was 16 years old.
It's not a good look, though.
No, it's certainly not a good look, but he doesn't care. He's going to count his money and smile and go to 47. It doesn't matter. He doesn't care.
As you see what Duarte said.
Duarte.
Double birds. I'm the champ now.
I love that. I'm the champ now. Like that. What's that movie? The Somali I'm the pirate. I'm the captain now. I love that. Listen, Duarte, you're the Oscar. I'm a big fan. I like you. That's not the way it works. You still got to go fight for the title and win a title.
Great promotion.
Well, he's done a really good job the way this has all worked out. Although, listen, this is complicated, right? Because obviously he's getting passed over because he should be the guy next in line. But if you look at the numbers, he was actually number three. And the fight was made with Hitchens. Number one was Delgado. Lindolfo Delgado has been waiting longer at the weight. Yeah. So he was number one in the IBF. So the reason he got pushed, looked over was because of that. It just sucks because he got shafted by not fighting. But also, he took a fight in the interim. He could have waited around and campaigned for the fight.
Is that IBF messing up and being unorganized? Because if you ask Duarte, would he rather fight on May 2nd or fight Delgado for the title in June or July?
Well, this is going to be our next point. They're both trained by Robert Garcia.
Oh, yeah.
They trained together. Robert said, I would rather these guys not fight right now. And I don't think they really want to fight each other right now either. that I have heard, and I've heard from people that Duarte is going to want to go the WBC route, so which is Dalton Smith. So they're going to go a different way.
Well,
so,
that's a banger.
That's a banger. That's a banger.
If he beats Puelo.
If he beats Puelo, yeah. And then the announcement of the Teofimo Lopez on Doppel fight, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I know Teofimo just got washed by Shakur, but Shakur washes so many guys, and he would wash so many guys. I don't think it's a huge knock on Teo for losing that fight. Yeah, it sucks the way he lost the way he did, but whatever. I think giving him a shot, I think he's still an A-class fighter. And Landolfo Delgado, I think this is a good matchup in terms of where they're at in their careers. Landolfo gets a big-name guy. He's still undefeated. He gets his title shot. Teofimo coming off the loss is again, an A-class guy. I think he's a much higher class than Landolfo. But I think at the time that they're meeting, it actually makes for a competitive fight.
Yeah, but does Teofimo take that fight? Because he's flirting with 147. There was rumors of him fighting Ryan Garcia. Is that looked at as a step backwards to fight Landolfo Delgado? No disrespect to Landolfo. For a 140-pound title, a weight class he's already been at the top of?
No. Go get a title. Go get a title at 140. You belong at 140, 147.
Yeah, but he doesn't even think of that stuff, though.
Does he not, though?
He's not going to fight. I don't think, if you put a gun to my head, he does not fight Landolfo Delgado.
Oh, I think he should. I think he wins
should,
that.
Yeah.
That fight. I don't think he's going to be in the running for the Ryan Garcia fight. Ryan has so many big fights coming. You can't come off a loss and go into a Ryan Garcia fight and fight for a title.
Yeah, I don't think that was like a quick rumor, and then Ben overshadowed it.
Yeah, no, he's coming off a loss. Go get your title back. Get a win under your belt. Get another title. You got negotiating power there. And I think he beats Delgado. I think...
Gritty fight. It's tough fight.
It's a gritty fight. It's not as difficult as Duarte. I think Duarte is much more difficult than Delgado.
Duarte did get hosed in this whole situation, yes. But he's making won the public perception.
Yep.
Won the public perception. He puts on a war with Angel Ferreira on May 2nd on PPV.com.
That's talking about banger. That's going to be a banger.
That's a banger. And he comes out looking great. He can go the WBC route. He can go the IBF route. If he doesn't want to fight his stable mate. But Hitchens to 147 makes a lot of sense, and it leads me to Devin Haney. Because I was thinking about this yesterday. I'm like, dude, who is Devin Haney going to fight? He hasn't fought since November of 2025 when he beat Brian Norman. Great win. Nothing on the schedule. Failed negotiations with Rolly Romero. That was supposed to be May 30th. Are we looking at one fight in 2026 for Devin Haney? One of the biggest names in the sport?
More than likely, yeah. One fight.
That sucks.
That does suck. I like Devin. I like him when he's active. I like all the fights that are out there for him. There's so many matchups. There's very few fighters that I can think of where I'm like, I would like to see him fight this guy. Oh, I would like to see him fight that guy as well. I would also like him to see him fight that guy. And I'm looking at that with Devin. I would like to see him fight Ryan is number one, of course, absolutely. I would like to see him fight Rolly Romero. That's another one I think is really an important fight for this weight class. Shit, even Conor Benn. I would like to see Devin fight Conor Benn. I'm not mad at that fight at all. There's so many fights that I would like to see Devin in. They're all big. They're all important. They all make money. They all make sense. But I will say this about Haney, and I've always got to include Bill when we're talking about Haney and Team Haney, because he is the mastermind. These guys are always up to something, man. They're not sitting around on their hands waiting. They're not waiting. If they're waiting, they're waiting with purpose. So I'm sure whatever they're going to come out with is going to be big. I've seen some videos of him training.
He's always in top shape.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting in shape, getting in better shape, but you see him in the gym, and I think that's indicative that something's looming.
Okay, so could Haney fight Hitchens?
He could. He could. I think they've gone back and forth with each other. Definitely 147 would have to be. That's a tough
issue. With Zuffa's involvement?
Why not? Put him on a ring card.
And Haney is a free agent.
Yeah. Haney's not going to take that money. Haney's taking money from everybody at some point. They're smart. they play the field.
I think the Rolly negotiation, failed negotiation, kind of exposed a little bit. It's exposed the business of boxing and shortcomings and why some fights aren't made, and kind of like right into the hands of TKO and Zuffa if they get their way. Whereas like they wanted to put up the money, like PBC was going to put up the $6 million, they said, for the event, to stage the event for Rolly's side. And Devin Haney and Devin Haney Promotions put up their side. They front the money towards all the things that need to put on a pay-per-view, venue, broadcast deal, all the money that goes into making a pay-per-view. And then they were going to take a percentage of everything that they made after the $6 million. So it's a risk. So Haney looked at it, was like, I'm not putting up my own money because he doesn't have a promoter. Like Matchroom has done that in the past when they had Haney because they have a bigger vault of money to do that. And that fight ultimately fell apart because Haney, I guess, deemed that it didn't make sense business-wise, didn't like the offer. So that could have been a fight for Haney was against Rolly. But we're seeing now, is Turkey invested in Devin Haney because he was a big-time client, or lack of a better term? Are we seeing like a cooling between Turkey and Devin Haney, whereas he has to go out and make his own fights? Is that why he's on the shelf?
Yeah, it seems like there's been a cooling of Turkey in boxing as of late.
Yeah,
we saw him. We saw him come out, you know, for the that last fight. But other than that, you know, we haven't heard a whole lot. And yes, obviously that area of the world is in serious turmoil. But I don't know if that's just it. It seems like the ball is rolling with TKO Group and Dana and then moving forward and maybe Turkey's visibility isn't as necessary as it was. The bankroll is still important, but how much longer is that going to last? And was that always really the idea that this was going to keep churning out the money, or is it just to get this established and then kind of pull back and let it do its own thing? So it's hard to figure out what the actual business plan of this actually is. But in terms of Turkey's involvement, it's been much more muted than it has been the last 2.5 years. So I don't know if that's something new, if that's how it's going to be from now on, but I guess time will tell. But in terms of Haney, I had heard that there was talk of a Rolly's Ryan fight that was like looming under the surface. And that was kind of keeping Haney and Rolly's from fighting. But then Conor Benn comes in and now his return and his defeat of Prograis, which, in not looking good, I think actually helped him get some of these opportunities, because now everybody's calling him out. He was calling everyone out before the fight, and everybody was like, "Okay, dude." And then he fights, doesn't look that good, and now everyone's like, "Okay, dude." You know, it's a whole different feeling, you know, from the guys that are around him now. And I think that kind of snuck Rolly's to get kicked to the side once again, because there was even talk of Rolly's and Ben. At a time, I think that's completely gone.
Rolly has been linked to everyone.
Everyone, yeah.
From his mandatory to Pacquiao to Ryan to Ben, and he's on the outside looking in now. He hasn't fought since last May.
Speaking,
is that right?
Yeah, that was Ryan.
That's a joke. He's crazy. On a year out.
World champion in a weight class that has gotten hot while he's been gone.
Listen, I'm all for TKO. Come on in, Nick. Come on, like.
Speaking of his mandatory,
fix our mess.
Shakhram Giyasov fighting Liam Paro. That could make welterweight.
Really? I thought he was fighting Catterall.
Oh, Catterall. Who's Liam Paro?
No, that's not right either.
It's not. Catterall's
at 140.
Isn't it Liam Paro? No, Catterall moved up to 47.
You're right. I think you're right about that.
I think it is Liam Paro. I feel like I saw that.
Catterall's fighting on the.
No, Catterall's fighting. Who's he fighting?
On the Usyk card.
But he is fighting Giyasov, no?
What weight is that at?
47.
Oh. This isn't in my plans. Why for some reason I thought, wow. I was thinking Rolly was a lightweight for some reason. Giyasov is fighting Catterall.
Oh, yeah. What happened to Liam Paro? This poor kid.
I don't know.
Because he was supposed to fight Crocker.
Crocker's the forgotten about guy at welterweight.
Well, so is Rolly's.
He might as well not even have a title, Crocker.
All right, listen to this. Okay, how does the mandatory for Rolly's, how does he fight and Rolly's doesn't?
Giyasov?
Yeah.
He's been the mandatory for a while and they've been paying him off. And I thought now, and I thought that Rolly was putting so much pressure on Haney to make this unification because he doesn't want to fight Giyasov because it's a tough fight and there's no money in it. And now he's now fighting Catterall on the Rico Verhoeven Usyk card. So I don't even know what's going on there. But yeah, it got me thinking about Haney and who will be fighting. But to go back several points ago about the Saudi, I did read that Live Golf is in trouble. I did read that in their latest report, the PIF.
Haven't they always been in trouble?
But now they're talking about like totally just shutting it all down, like totally down. And then the PIF, the public fund in Saudi, put out a report for the next 4 years about what they're going to be investing in, and it did not mention sports outside of the World Cup. So that means golf, boxing, Tom Brady's flag football league, all that stuff. There's no plans for it.
But power slap is good, right? Keeping power slap?
That's a whole different ballgame. I hate Power Slap.
I know you do. That's why I like bringing it up.
God, it's the worst. It's trash. Well, I saw Conor Benn at it. You see that?
At an event? Well, they've been parading him out.
So they pretty much make them, whoever signs the Zuffa or UFC fighter, they do the Power Slap events, I think are just now streamed. And Nina Drama is at a table, and it's streamed on like Kick or something. And they had new Zuffa signee, Conor Benn, and they were reacting because it's like part of the media obligations.
What did they do? What was that? The Grammys or something? They had like they were parading out like certain members of the UFC, and like it's just like it's just I understand it's good for the guy's platform, whatever. But like you're getting paraded. You're owned, but that company owns you. That's the beautiful thing about being a boxer. You don't have to do anything. You just got to show up and fight, dude. You don't work for anybody but yourself. And that was always the beauty of boxing. That's what I love about boxing. I was my own boss. Even though I had a promoter or whatever, I was still the boss. I did what I wanted to do.
Can't hurt, though.
I fought when I wanted to fight. But no, it can't hurt at all.
Julian Hammerhands, Shane Mosley Jr., who just signed to Zuffa, being at WrestleMania, not really making a dent in terms of fans being like, oh, I want to watch their fights. But
fun experience for them.
Fun experience. It kind of just shows the marketing arm of Zuffa. TKO. So I don't know what's going to go on with the welterweight division. I don't know what's going to go on with the Saudi funds. So you did bring up the war there, too. Like, that's a big reason why we're not seeing any fights there. They moved the Tom Brady's the flag football tournament. Was supposed to be in Saudi. It was being planned to happen there. Obviously, the war is going on nearby in Iran, and they moved it to L.A., and that pissed off Turkey and pissed off their entertainment board there. So they're on the outs. So there hasn't been a
because they don't want to fly over a war torn area. Like
Tom Brady doesn't want to be in the middle of a war, in Logan Paul and like NFL players. But yeah, that's a big reason why. Because Canelo and Billy, from everything I'm seeing too, it's not in Billy, but Canelo September event is also supposed to be penciled in for Saudi. And I saw a few things that's what the plan is. I would wonder if that's still going to happen over there.
Things are going to have to change real quick. I mean, with the way they're going now.
Not that this is a political war podcast.
And not that we are capable of speaking about this with any kind of, that anyone should be listening
validity.
To.
Validity.
Speaking of which, let's change the damn subject.
Let's move on. The final thing. Jarrell Miller fights Lenier Pero this weekend.
Not a bad fight. So I called Lenier Pero's last fight. He fought over in Orlando on a DAZN card. He looked good. He is good. 33 years old, Cuban, 13-0, decent power, not a killer puncher at heavyweight, not huge for heavyweight either. But that night, Jarrell Miller was there and jumps in the ring and starts getting in Pero's face and calls out the fight. And I'm on the mic like, all right, well, there's a next fight made. This seems pretty easy to do, and here we are. So we do have a narrative. Nobody sells a fight like Jarrell Miller in the heavyweight division right now. He's awesome at it. He's got a lot of notoriety because of his hairline. And he's been all over and everywhere.
So you buried the lead there, bro. You buried the lead.
Yeah. So
he's getting this fight because his hair fell off.
No, he's getting his fight because he got in the ring with this guy. Boom, boom, boom. He had to win that last fight. He didn't look good in it.
Dude, you're telling me if Jarrell Miller doesn't go mega viral, his hairpiece doesn't fall off, he doesn't go on Jimmy Kimmel's show, doesn't do all this media, TMZ, they're not making this a main event on Matchroom.
Main event, no. No, this is very different undercard, yeah. This is a main event? Yeah, all right, good for Jarrell. So, yeah, so he's capitalizing on a situation, which no one in the world could do better than Jarrell, because this is the way this guy is. No one could capitalize on something so embarrassing the way that he has, and it's actually turning into dollars and cents to put in his bank account. But this is a tough fight. Pero is good.
He is good. It's a pretty even fight on the odds. It is minus 150, Miller, favorite, Pero plus 120. I'd throw some money on Pero.
I'm not betting against...
You love this guy.
I'm not betting against a guy with a hairline like that. He will go out there. There's nothing.
He'll do anything to win.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing will stop him from looking for victory.
Pero by decision plus 220. Oof. How many rounds? It doesn't say how many rounds.
Pero's not stopping him. So that's actually a juicy bet.
Definitely not stopping him.
No way. He's not a puncher.
I think Pero's going to win.
He's not a puncher, and Jarrell is very durable.
Is it 10 rounds or is it 12 rounds? This feels like a 10 rounder.
It does feel like a 10 rounder. But a 10 round main event?
I wouldn't be shocked by that.
Where's the card?
Jarrell Miller, Vegas. Jarrell Miller, the only boxer to ever hang up on me on an interview on Inside Boxing, the history of the 8-year history of the show. Bad guy.
I talked to him about it.
You think he's a good guy? No, I think he's a bad guy.
I talked to him about it. He was.
No, you didn't.
He was late to get his burgers. He's a big fan of.
He probably was hungry.
He was just hangry.
Twelve rounder.
It is a 12-rounder.
Not to open up old wounds, but it was he was about to sign with Matchroom. He hadn't signed yet. And I think I said, "All right, so you're going to sign with Matchroom," and he's like, "Wait a sec, no, that's wrong. Like, do your homework, motherfucker." Hangs up. Next day, he signs with Matchroom.
Well, he had already signed with Matchroom. He just didn't want it. He didn't want to air it on your show. He said, "Fuck this show. I've never heard of this show. Nobody's heard of this show. Fuck this guy."
He just wasn't even a good interview either. He was not in the mood. So
he was probably hungry. Like I said, he didn't want to talk to you.
But karma came and got him when his hair flew off 12 years later.
Karma got him a few times, buddy.
Yeah, the PED. That's another thing too. Like, this guy does an insane amount of PEDs. I never thought in a million years he'd keep getting all these shots. And I never thought in a million years he'd be working with Eddie Hearn. Do we not remember the animosity between Hearn, Jarrell Miller, Anthony Joshua, ruining that promotion? Ruiz steps in, knocks out Anthony Joshua.
This
the what if game
is boxing, Dan. This is
the what ifs. The domino effect.
This is thick skin, short memory territory. That's boxing. Thick skin, short memory. Keep it moving.
That's crazy though. If you think about it, you know, they handpicked Jarrell Miller to fight Anthony Joshua, and Joshua's big New York City debut, big U.S. debut. The promotion was heating up. It was great. Guy tests positive for multiple PEDs.
Like everything. Like an entire pharmacy worth.
Every PED under the book. Then they go and find Andy Ruiz, who's in Hearn's DMs, who had fought 6 weeks prior. He steps in there, second biggest upset in heavyweight boxing history. Safe to say that? Or one of the top five.
Yeah. I fought that night.
I fought
on that card. Fought on the undercard. Scored a TKO in the big room at the Garden.
So you want to be a fighter?
Busted my nose.
Do you think, though, like that number one biggest heavyweight, obviously, is Tyson losing to Buster Douglas? Would you put Ruiz, Joshua, number two? Or would you put Tommy Morrison,
Leon Spinks,
Michael Bent?
Leon Spinks, Muhammad Ali.
Even a faded Muhammad Ali?
Yes. Leon Spinks was, I mean, I know he's a gold medalist, but he was not a very good pro. And that was... It's Ali, dude. That's huge.
I think Ruiz, Joshua's definitely in there. 42-1. There. Oh, right here it's showing Tommy Morrison losing to Michael Bent.
Oh, yeah, it was bad.
Michael Bent was on this show.
Michael Moore and Foreman. Big upset.
Yeah, definitely. 46 years old, heavyweight division. Michael Bent had that awesome Netflix episode.
Yes, he did.
It was called Losers.
Which is such a...
Horrible name, yes. But he was always looked at as he had the best amateur, one of the best amateurs ever. Didn't really want to box because his dad forced him into it. I think he lost his debut, lost his second fight. Something like that. Didn't live up to the hype of his amateur career, but then ultimately has one of the biggest upsets. Everything came together on one night, beats Tommy Morrison, upends Morrison versus Holyfield, who was ringside. And then I reached out to him randomly. This is when I didn't have a co-host. And I said, "Hey, would you join our show?" It was an awesome interview. Guy's like a thespian.
I did a play with him, actually.
no way.
Yeah. Great guy. Really. I mean, handsome.
Awesome guy.
Well-spoken.
Yeah.
Smart. You name it, man. Just, I see why he didn't want to box. He didn't strike me like a guy who was, you know, growing up rough and tough like he wanted to fight. He was kind of like forced into it. And then, you know, wins a world title. And then like... Yeah, loses like, I'm good. He seems like he has no issues about his career, you know, how it went or being done with it or not being able to fight anymore. He's good. He's doing just fine.
I'm still friends with him on Facebook. I think he wished me a happy birthday last year.
That's great.
On Facebook.
Very cool guy.
Yeah, thank you, Michael Bent. Hope you're doing well out there. To put a bow on that whole story, my dad got on the Top Rank private jet with Bob Arum.
Been on there a few times.
With Bob Arum. And they're flying back after the fight. The Bent beats Tommy Morrison. Tommy Morrison was supposed to fight Holyfield.
Yeah.
and they're on the private jet, and like back then the bathrooms, there weren't like a door in the bathroom, it was just a curtain, and some guy was doing the business in the bathroom, doing number two, and it started to smell up the jet, my dad said. And the guy goes, there's no toilet paper here. Aram grabs the contract for Tommy Morrison and Holyfield and goes, here, use this, it's useless.
Bob with the epic timing. That doesn't surprise
me. Bob Canobio with the story.
That doesn't surprise me at all. One, both Bobs.
From Bob to Bob.
From your Bob, your dad Bob, with the epic story, and then Bob Arum with the epic timing. He's so cutting, too, with the way Bob says things.
Yeah, this piece of paper is useless to wipe your ass with this.
There you go. Wow.
And I think his wife, what's his wife's name? Aram's wife? Still his wife. Todd DeBuff's biological mother. She was on the plane too, smelling the poo. Crazy story.
Great story.
That's how we end the show.
Great Dan. Great story, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Hope you enjoy the weekend. We have a little bit of a light schedule, boxing wise, but like we said at the beginning, we are gearing up towards what should be a phenomenal May everywhere, all over the fighting globe. I just booked my flights for this Netflix MMA card, staying in Manhattan Beach.
Ooh,
that should be epic. Fight week there. So, all right, everyone, enjoy your weekend. Any final words, Chris, for our boxing brethren?
No, nothing will kill boxing. Nothing will save it. Stay tuned. We're going to be here a while.
I hope so. Protect yourself at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs or out.